This week, we're also looking at symmetry as it pertains to the universe, and Professor Ben Alanak is with us. He's a particle physicist. The world around us looks pretty symmetrical to me, Ben, but it's not.
That's right. Yeah, it's a weird thing when you look at your hands and they look as if they've got mirror symmetry. They don't look particularly different. And macroscopic large objects don't seem that different through a mirror. But the weird thing is when you look at the smallest bits of matter, particles like electrons, the outer bits of atoms, they look asymmetric in a very special way. And also there's an asymmetry between matter and antimatter, which is very important for our existence.
When you say an asymmetry, I mean, let's just back up a bit here, because when we're talking about matter and antimatter, we're going right the way back to the Big Bang, aren't we? And the fact that energy gets converted into material in the universe. And there's not really a fundamental reason why you shouldn't have equivalent amounts of matter and its mirror image equivalent antimatter. But what we see the universe is made of is matter.
That's right. We're all made of matter. There's not much antimatter around at all. You can make it at places like CERN when you convert energy the other way into matter and antimatter. But the question is, you know, why did we end up all being matter? If you do the sums in the early universe was a hot cloud of gas, and there's matter and antimatter are bouncing around. And if you work out the equilibrium of that, you're going to get pretty much equal amounts to a very good statistical average.
Based on our present models.
Yeah, based on our present understanding of physics, and experiments like CERN give us that understanding.
But like obviously when we make the observation, we see we're all made of matter, and as you say, antimatter vanishingly rare. So where's it all gone?
So in fact, when you bring matter and antimatter together, of course, they annihilate into radiation. So particles of light, for example, will come out of that. And so the question is more, why aren't we all light? Made of light, right? Because if you have equal amounts...
Some people are stars, aren't they, Ben? Like you.
That's right. I think I'm a bit heavier than that. So there's got to have been some slight difference between matter and antimatter. And in fact, in the particle physics experiments at the end of last century, those differences are starting to come out. So they feel forces very slightly differently, not to a large extent, but the, you know, if you do the theory of what's going on, you need a slight difference between how matter interacts and how antimatter interacts, along with some other conditions in the early universe, and you get a slight tilting that favours one over the other, and in this case favours matter over antimatter, and you have to follow all this complicated math through. But as long as you've got a slight tilting, there's 15 billion years, you know, in between where lots of boring things happen, but we end up, you know, luckily being made of matter and not light.
But I mean, I was watching Frank Close talking the other day. He's got a video on the internet from when he was giving his talk at the Royal Society, because he got the Faraday Medal this year for public understanding of science. And he was making some of these points, and he was sort of saying, you know, do you think it's a mistake or just by chance that we have arrived at this situation where physics just by chance means that actually we can exist and we're not just energy or light? Or do you think the fact that isn't it extraordinary that we compare the nucleus of an atom and the charge on a proton, and it's exactly counterbalanced by the charge on an electron? But then an electron is just one thing, whereas if we zoom in on a proton, it's actually got three other little particles inside it. Those are the quarks, aren't they? And actually, there are three of those, but two of them are sort of two-thirds, the other one's one-third, and they balance out to be about the right amount so that it completely opposes an electron and the two counterbalance. That's extraordinary, and it's too much of a good outcome to be chance, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the accuracy on that charge measurements is fantastic. I mean, it's 1 in 10 to the 10 or something. But I think there's an underlying reason for that. And the underlying reason could be the grand unified theory, which says that the particles which make up a proton and the electron are two different aspects of some underlying particle, where an asymmetry has been introduced in that, which splits the two off, but it explains exactly why you have this quantization of charge, and the charge of a quark comes in multiples of a third of the charge of the electron. So there are other examples of theories where you get a precise mathematical relation between the charges of things. And I suspect it's probably due to that, rather than, I don't know, there being a billion universes and, you know, you just pick at random one where we
are
can
you
exist.
Are not in favour of the idea that there might be multiple universes? This is the sort of Michio Kaku parallel universes where we just happen to inhabit the one where the rules of physics work for us.
The problem I have with it is that you can't test that theory. So it's really interesting to speculate about it, but I don't think we can ever know, even in principle, And so it's outside of science.
I thought the whole idea was, you know, we're trying very hard to detect gravity waves propagating because the theory says that, you know, if we've got these parallel universes, then gravity ought to be able to transit between them. And therefore, if we can see the waves of that gravity coming from one to the next, it sort of says they exist. Do you think that because we haven't found it, therefore that disproves that these parallel universes can exist then?
No. The question is there any point in space and time where our universe is connected to one of these so-called parallel universes? If there is, I'd count that as being part of our universe, because where space is...
That's a mathematical trick, Ben. Aren't you being crafty?
That's what we do. That's what we get paid for. No, I mean, if it's connected in space and time, it is part of our universe. But you're right. I mean, if you've got some foaminess, you should be able to detect that. But I don't count that as this multiverse theory, but it would certainly be very interesting if most of the time it's not connected, but, you know, back on Tuesday last week it was, and you could detect the gravitational radiation from that. That would be one way of me eating my words. But but if it goes the other way and you don't see the gravitational radiation, you can't say one way or the other, and I suspect that that's going to be the case. And so that's my problem with it more.
Stephen Drake.
That's just wiped out a whole genre of science fiction.
Whoops. But Chris, in your book, Right Hand, Left Hand, I mean, you actually make the point early on there that, and this is something that sort of Pasteur said in the early days, which is that asymmetry begets asymmetry. So starting with the asymmetries and the tiny particles that Ben studies, that leads actually up to a whole organism or even a whole world with gross asymmetries with us in it.
That's right. If you keep backtracking, whenever you find an asymmetry, something else must have caused it. And you can keep going back and back and back, and you end up exactly where Ben is. Yeah.